Hey everyone, how you doing? Welcome to this week's episode of our show. It's called Is Breakfast Included? How are you? Thank you for stopping by. On the show this week, we have Don McCauley. Now, Don is a longtime drum tech. He works for the Rolling Stones. He is currently looking after Bram Vandenberg for U2, who's filling in for the great Larry Mullins Jr. He took some time out of his day to tell us everything he does. Don is, in all sense of the word, an artist, whether it be playing music, working in the industry, making drums, making furniture, everything. He does it all. And he stopped by to tell us all about it. And it was a great time. Anyway, let's check it out. Tell everyone who you are.
Hey, man, Bernie. I'm friends with you, and that's enough for me.
Tell everyone your name.
Oh, my name. Yeah, I was given the name by my dad, Don McCauley. Yeah, and I am currently juggling between two bands of working as a rock and roll butler for the Rolling Stones, as well as the band U2, looking after the drummers and their drum equipment, and helping the back line. Yeah,
right on, man. What's your background? Do you play drums? Do you come from a musical family?
I live, eat, breathe music, and mostly drums. And my dad's a drummer, so it's all his fault. And I've had a pair of drum sticks and a drum kit and percussion items in my house since I was born.
I know, man.
And relatives that play music, piano and guitar, and I just mess around with both of those. But drums are my instrument.
Yeah,
is my instrument.
Yeah. And what was it about drums? Why you say you eat, breathe, live drums?
I woke up, born, and was put in a house that had drums in it. So you go get your Cheerios in the morning, and there's a set of drums right there. And living in New England, we get major snowstorms, and you get locked in for a couple days as a kid, and you put the headphones on with a record, and you play along to the records, and I just play drums always. So that's why I can't get away from it now.
All right. So you've been playing pretty much all your life.
Yes.
Yeah. When did you first start playing professionally, like in a band?
Professionally, 16 years old, started playing with guys twice my age. And 2 weeks later in a recording studio, making, recording two songs at this, really cool recording studio called Wendell Recording Studio. It was owned by these Rastas that were recording, Jamaican music there. And it was designed to sound like Studio One records. And that was my first, go around it, professionalism. And then touring with bands, my own band, and recording with bands all around the world, mostly the US and Canada and some Europe. But, and I still do that between going on tour with other musicians, professional musicians.
How confident were you, man, when you started playing with these older cats and going into the studio? How confident were you being a kid practically? Like, did you go in there like wide eyed, or did you go in there like, this is my job, I'm going to do it?
A little bit of both. That's a really interesting question, actually, because at that age, you don't know what you want, or you don't know what's real yet. Yeah. You don't know if, but the same people you meet on the way up are the same people you meet on the way down, is what I was always told by the older guys.
Yeah.
And so you take that for what it is, and you say, just be, as a drummer, just be the pocket. So don't come in with, it's not your song. You're supporting the songwriter.
Yeah.
So you have to just be that clock, but be the creative guy as well. So you come in and just play the part, and I'm not coming in playing a drum solo. I'm playing in to play the part. So that's always thought.
Yeah. That's funny. The people you meet on the way up, you meet them on the way down. That was advice given to me when I first started. Like,
yeah,
don't cross anyone. Don't walk in like you own the thing. Just go in, right. Know your role, stay your lane, help out where you can, but you know, that's what people are going to remember. And it seems to be true. Like, I'm not on my way down yet, but
we all are, but we all are eventually. We don't know when that is. It's up to you. How do you want to keep in a floating? And that's a thing I've been working on a lot over the past couple of years anyways, is finding that moment of not have, I'm going to go on up on a tangent here for a second, but
that's fine.
Finding that moment of where you don't, space and time, don't put so much pressure on your time, let it float. And as techs, we do that a lot. We have to do something, we're really urgent, but then all of a sudden there's nothing. So I've been trying to find and harness that time of when you realize you don't know what time or day it is your floating period. And if you can do that with music or art in general,
yeah,
you make your best work.
Yeah.
You know, if you're urgent, emergency, everything's like urgent. I got to do this. I got to do that. Oh, I got to do this now, or supposed to do that, or expectations. You know, you're not doing service to your art or the people you're playing music with or creating art with.
Yeah. And I was going to say that goes for any kind of creative process, right?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So I feel too. Yeah. Yeah. It's something I've been working on a lot.
Yeah. One thing I've recognized or that I've noticed in you, Donnie, is you seem to be always creating something, whether it be, you know, with drums. Like, I watch you at your station, you're constantly middling around, if that's so, with something. Yeah. Like, you're never just, you know, you're hanging, but at the same time, you're using your time to create something.
Yeah, that's important. That's important. Yeah, especially with the work that we do, and we put so much time into it. We show up hours before the band does, and it's not that one particular person's job is more, which it is, more advanced, or you know, you have to do a lot of things. Like, let's just say a lot of guitar techs will have a lot of guitars they have to maybe have to change strings over, this and that, and constantly keep tuning and constantly keep working on the project. And that's that. With drums, it's a little different. Once it's set up, it's there. You just make sure you maintain and you just keep it going. So the downtime, what do you do with your time? It's not so much to change anything, because like in the studio, you don't want to keep changing too much until the track is over. So I find that I just do other little projects that I might get to and complete a year from now, or something you've learned along the way, and you start messing with it, and you alter a symbol or you alter something. And yeah, just be creative, just being creative, finding moments, you know.
Yeah.
Rather than sitting on the YouTube all day or on Facebook or something, you know. Mind numbing, man.
I do notice, like, I've come over to your world, and the other day you had like rivets going into this small symbol. Are those practices something you've heard of, or do you just get an idea in your head, like, I'm going to try that? Or
I go and buy and find percussion items that date back to like 1800s, which I love, and I collect all sorts of stuff. And all those things like that are just tools that they had done way back then in the early jazz eras, in the early, you know, the vaudevillian style things. Those are all practices and things that they've used way back then. So I don't change it. I'm just doing it.
Yeah.
But yeah, those are cool things that I love doing. Yeah, putting rivets and cymbals, or you know, messing with the snare drum to change the tone, make it sound so completely different than any other snare. And those are altering items. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and right now you're looking after Bram Vandenberg.
Lovely guy. And one hell of a drummer and human being.
When you bring someone of your experience and your background, which you just said, and you mesh it with a drummer, a young drummer like Bram, how does that, what's the result in that? Is he open to hearing your ideas? Are you open to, like, say, know when to stay back?
Most definitely. Your job, my job, is to let him be as creative as possible, or to let him be as regimented as possible. It's up to him. And I am just, I'm a professional enabler. Mm-hmm. That's how I look at it. So I will put my two cents in.
Yeah.
And say, you know, I see where you're coming from. You also might want to try this. It's not like there's a right or wrong.
Yeah.
So he has been really receptive to that. We come from very similar, but also very different backgrounds of music. Maybe that's pretty broad, but I'd say we come from very similar places, but different approaches sometimes.
Yeah.
And that's the strength, I think, that we both can offer each other. And that is cool for me because I've made a difference and he's made a difference. To answer your question, my job is to make sure he is able to do everything he wants to do when he's up there for that gig. And he knows that this particular gig with you too, being the drummer, is you're just playing, not just, you're playing the record, but you need to put a little of yourself into it and to be creative with who he is. And every once in a while you hear him alter something and it's like, there's Brahm. Yeah. So he and the band is receptive to that. And we all, I think now we champion that. We're like, yeah, man, you be you.
Yeah.
And I don't think Larry Mullen would want him to be like, and I know for a fact, actually, Larry's told me this. He doesn't want to have to look over his shoulder and be like, you're doing it wrong. It's like, no, you're being you. And this is how you're feeling this song.
Yeah. You're being you, but you're also staying true.
See, very true to the part.
Yeah.
Very true. And he's constantly working on that, which I think is the magic. He's constantly working on it. Cool.
Is that a hard thing for a new drummer to come in and just fill in for a cat that's been there since the beginning? Is that a hard thing for a drummer to just to be true and not want to, well, this is how I would do it, you know?
It takes consummate pro to come in to be the chameleon.
Mm-hmm.
But you have to have the confidence and you have to be open and willing to be a chameleon and to change the color or shape or whatever it is of your craft to be another person, another drummer.
Yeah.
You and I can, you know, rehearse as Brahm did, you know, diligently, really, really hard and push really hard to be that guy, that part, and be that thing. You have to have the confidence to do it first and foremost, but you also have to have played in a lot of musical situations to be able to be that guy. Otherwise, I think the other guys are going to be like, no, this is how I do it. And then they obviously haven't put enough time into other styles of music, other styles of art.
Yeah. Yeah.
If that answers.
Yeah, yeah, it does. It does.
Yeah, sort of.
So coming from your background, you restore old drums, you repair drums, you're a drummer, you're a drum tech. How does all of that come into play when you're doing one or the other?
It all blends really well, and it all stems from being a lot of it stems from being a custom furniture builder.
Uh-huh.
My grandfather was a furniture builder. My dad and I have had a custom rustic furniture.com. Custom rustic furniture.com.
Is that what it's called? Is that what
a little plug there. Okay. Custom rustic furniture build for different designers and things. And working with your hands and restoring drums stems from the woodworking of it. And the drum part of it comes from being a drummer. And it all collaborates and amalgamates, and it all blends together in one soup that I like to call, you know, something. I like to call it being creative. But what's your question?
How does everything you do, like how does, when you're restoring a drum, when you're restoring an old drum from the 20s or whatever, how does being a, of course I know how being a tech plays into that, but how does being a drummer, like are you restoring it as a drummer, as a tech, as a
I got you there
builder?
it's a combination. So when I'm restoring it for myself, Depending on what that item is, if it's a, if it's an item that should not be altered and you want it to be period correct and you're working for a museum or something to that effect, like you want to get it back to the original true period correct way that the drum or item should be and was particularly built. So like using hide glue instead of using another type of glue because they used hide glue back then, or a different type of finish because that was the finish they used. Or using calfskin heads instead of plastic heads, which were, you know, something that came out in the 50s or something, you know, like you want to do it that way. But if I'm making it for myself as a player, I might very well alter it. If I'm doing that for another, for somebody else, let's say I'm creating, I worked on an item for Charlie Watts, which was his old, all of his old drums. I'm going to get them period correct because it's a item that has a lot of provenance. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, this guy wants to play it live in the modern era. So I might have to alter the item. So it's really up to the customer, or it's really up to the end user, the end product.
Yeah.
And my creativity puts, you know, I can alter the shit out of something, but I typically like to be old school and make it period correct.
Yeah. Okay. That answers my question.
Good. Thanks, man.
you mentioned working for the Rolling Stones. Like, you've looked after, I want to say a legend in Charlie Watts, and then another very, very well-respected drummer, Steve Jordan. Like, what's the difference in those two cats, man? You were Charlie's guy for years, and now Steve is part of the band, and you know.
Well, with any drummer, a different drummer is different thing altogether. But respectfully, Steve knows Charlie's world very well, and he comes in being who he is, and that's been a topic directly. I've talked with him directly, and he needs to be who he is, but he also know, and not trying to change or alter anything in that sense, but to be who he is, but to honor and to give the songs what they need, especially recording sessions, as Charlie. And so, but if he's going to play, you know, Under My Thumb, he's going to try to play like Charlie, but there's going to be moments where he's going to, Steve saying, he's going to be who he is.
Mm-hmm.
The thing about that is that, of course, Charlie would play those parts, and he's always reinventing himself. He was always reinventing himself constantly. So he might not try to be like, oh, this is what I do in the record, or this is what I did last night. It's like, well, how do I feel today? You know, what would Max Roach have done? And he was always thinking like, what's the, you know, what's what Chico Hamilton, this great drummer, he might listen to him beforehand and be like, oh, or Duke Ellington's drummer, Sonny Greer. And he'd be like, that's how I'm going to play it tonight in that part. So he's always reinventing himself. But yeah, both legendary, cool ass drummers.
Yeah.
And sweet, wonderful, you know, good friends.
Yeah. And coming into that, I'm, this is a dumb question. Were you a fan of Charlie's? Did you feel intimidated at all going into that?
Fuck yeah.
You know?
Oh, yeah. 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 Huge fan of Charlie Watt since I was a baby. Massive fan. One of my favorite drummers. I could never figure out what the hell he was trying to do, play, because he was always like, are there 12 drummers on this, in this band? You know? That's kind of how I was feeling when I tried to play along to it. Big fan, huge fan. And then meeting him calmed all of the anxiety down after 2 seconds. I came into it as a big fan.
Yeah. And
I was placed by Keith Richards, guitar tech, who was a crew chief, Pierre de Beauport. I was placed right between Charlie and Keith for the entire day for rehearsal. Everything was all set up.
Yeah.
And I came in, it's for my first day. And I was put between the two of them. And he says, you need to understand this space. And that's and that's where that. So it's the two of them. It's not just one of them. It's the two. It's it takes two, baby.
Uh-huh. And when you say he placed you in between them, was that something that you understood what he was talking about, or were you like, yeah, you know?
Yeah, I did. Because I had been playing music, but to get on this subject about that and coming into that world, I had been playing music with Pierre, Keith's guy, for a few years before even going in anywhere near the Stones world. Mm-hmm. And so he's entrenched in it. He is fully in the garden. So I got to know what all of that meant way back playing with my own bands, what it really meant, but it came into focus playing music with him, of what that meant to be in the garden, to be in that space between the rhythm. People think it's bass and guitar, bass and drum. But with that particular band and a lot of those styles of music, it's the rhythm guitar player, which is Keith Richards.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I understood it. I understood it very well. But I'm still learning. We're all learning, but I'm still trying to figure it out.
Yeah.
How it works.
Yeah. And do you take from one gig to another, do you take what you do with one gig, do you bring that to another gig, or is it, each drummer is different, of course, but do you bring that style of teching to each gig?
Yeah. Yeah, most definitely. Most definitely. I'm playing Brahms drumsticks right now, and I need to understand what those are like for him. He's a much bigger guy than I am.
Yeah.
Fucking monster, that guy, isn't he? Like, yeah. 9.5 feet tall or something. Yeah. You know,
hair flowing in the wind.
Yeah, you know, big, you know, Fabian. I have to understand what he's doing up there. So I will go back to my studio and I'll play along to YouTube stuff, and not to get it exact, but to go, oh, that's why the energy is like that. To my understanding, that's what's going on with that. And I will bring that to my own gig. I played a blues gig the other night, and I channeled a drummer that I worked for named Tommy Arlino from the band NRBQ. And I had channeled that because the music led me down that path with the other players. And if I was to play in a rock thing that was a similar thing to a U2 thing, I would be channeling what Larry or Brahm are doing.
Uh-huh.
And you, that's the artwork.
Yeah.
That's the art.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to veer off for a second. What is it like, if you could explain it, if you could put it into words to people who don't quite understand, what is it like being you, drums 24/7 in some sort of, you know,
living hell?
Because I know that when you and I sit down for breakfast, or we're sitting down just talking, yeah, we could start here, that somehow drums make their way into the conversation. And I'm always fascinated with how, I don't want to use the word obsessed, but it could be obsessed, but or just very passionate about the, yeah, drums. Like there's cats that love guitar. Like stories about like Slash, he always has a guitar in his hand. Yeah. People sit down and talk with him. He's playing a guitar. You know, he wants a guitar in his hand at all times, but he doesn't.
It's like Jay. It's like Jay Maskus. Jay Maskus, if he doesn't have one in his hand, he's sounding it. He's like, it's going off in his brain.
Yeah. You know?
It's an obsession. Some people have put it.
Some folks will say like, oh, I'm obsessed with this, I'm obsessed with that, but they have other shit going on in their life. And but you are very fortunate. I mean, you love drums. You, like I said, you restore them, you build them, you repair them, you play them. And then you also work on the road as a drum tech.
Yeah. Yeah. It always comes back around to drums or woodworking.
Mm-hmm.
It always comes back around. What's it like? It's to be that, I guess you could, it's a chosen path.
Yeah.
First and foremost.
Find peace there?
Sorry?
Do you find peace in all of that?
Yeah. Yes. and it's a drums or coming up with beat, drums coming up with beats, or you know, feeding that desire, that impulse, is a reaction to maybe a nervous energy that might be put into other ways.
Yeah.
If you had different outlets, this is the outlet I like to use. Think about making furniture, being creative with, or create art in a way like that, is juxtaposed. It's completely different, and which is, I really like the difference of woodworking opposed to drumming.
Yeah.
Somehow I find that they bind together because of my thought is how they soothe my nervous energy.
Wow. Okay.
You know, but I can be super fucking calm too and not say a word for days. But when I'm trying to be creative, it's like, okay, I got to have something. Something's got to stimulate that nerve, you know, something's got to stimulate that. And I found that drums are the thing that, and my dentist tells me that is the case too, because I'm fucking chattering and creating beats with my teeth. And they say, man, you got to figure that out. You know what I mean? It's like, all the best drummers have, like, you know, fucked up teeth.
Right. All right on, man. That makes sense. man, you're one of the most likable people I've ever met in my life. People tell me I'm likable. And this
yes,
is
you are.
Me. People big say time, that. Man. But you are one of the most likable people like I've yet.
Oh, damn. Thank you.
You brought someone down and you introduced them to me and Stuart, and then you guys walked off and Stuart looked over at me. He goes, is there anybody that Donnie doesn't know?
There's a drummer. Lots of people I don't want to.
Yeah. Drummer from some band. And he's like, is there anybody that Donnie doesn't know? It's like, you know, during the first run, I was talking to you. You're like, oh, yeah. A friend of mine just walked in with Jackson Brown. We were hanging out back.
I feel fortunate to gravitate towards people who are of like mind and creativity. And, and so, you know, a lot of high friends in low places and low friends in high places, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's,
do you find that important in our industry to be likable? Cause there's a lot of people in our industry that make it a point to be unlikable, and that's their whole shtick.
Right. And, right. Totally. 100%. Yeah. And then those are the people that we try to break down and go, I know you're going to smile.
Yeah.
And what's it going to take? You know, because you want to hang out with these cats who maybe are grumpy or something. You're like, I know you're a good person in there. You wouldn't be here if you weren't.
Yeah.
I guess you have to be likable in a sense in the industry we are. I've never thought about it.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm sure I can be a can I say anything really?
Yeah.
I can be a complete proper cunt. Wait, you can edit that out if you want.
Just now, let me touch on what you just said. You said, like, you there's those people and you're like, I know there's something about you that's likable. It is true, man. Like that's what it is about you. You do not see the bad in anybody, even though you probably know that there's some bad in there.
Oh, there's bad in all of us. But you want to go give everybody the benefit of the doubt and be like, you know, hey, man, we're all human here. We're all trying to do the same thing, which is just be happy and not try to be a people pleaser and subservient and try to be like this, like, you know, I'm going to try to be somebody I'm not in order to do this. That comes through. I've seen that happen, and I mean, we're probably all guilty of that in a little way here or there.
Yeah,
we realize maybe about ourselves that, why, you know, what's at the end of it, you know, if you weren't you, who would you be? Like, you know, if you didn't sound like you, who would you sound like? You know, so we got to just be ourselves, and hopefully it works with other people, man. And luckily for me, I just be myself, like yourself, man. I mean, you came into our world with the U2 world as an assistant bass tech. as you what you're doing, and the trust is already. It seems to me as though the trust is already there with all of everybody because they're like, oh, this dude's a good person. So, not trying to get something over on somebody, which comes through really loud and clear when you see it. You know,
it does, right? When you're too eager to, you know.
And that's, there's a lot of narcissists in this business, and they come through and they're exposed usually pretty quick.
Yeah.
Because there's no time for bullshit.
No, there isn't.
You just hope you don't work. You hope you don't work for anybody like that. And I've been like, I'm never working for anybody like that.
Yeah. That's my thing too. I won't work for anyone that, you know, I always say that I like to be treated like a human being.
That's right.
You know, fortunately, I've worked for the majority of the people I work for, you know.
Yep. Exactly. Yeah, man. Yeah. We are extremely fortunate. We're blessed in that sense so that we can do those kinds of things.
And we are. We work around, and then we surround ourselves with the people we work side by side with like-minded people.
That's right. Exactly.
On that subject of working and touring and playing, like what we're doing now is this residency, man. Do you see that as the future of touring?
Oh, no. Come on, no.
Do you still enjoy the bus and the touring?
I don't like the bus. I don't like the bus. Unless you're going through the fjords, you know, unless you're going through this beautiful place in the world.
Do you enjoy what we're doing now?
It is the future, but it's also the past.
Yeah.
No, it is my future all in the past? You know, that kind of thing, right? Is it already? We're only doing what they had done in the 40s. Residencies have been around forever. You know, in the 20s in the jazz world, like, you know, as a residency, they come around and they go to these places and they can't afford to bounce around.
Yeah.
You know, we're lucky to be working for bands that can afford to bounce around, but choose to put on a show. But this is nothing new at all, you know? Mm-hmm. But my preference is to do some of each.
Yeah.
I'm really enjoying the fact that we're doing residency now. And I never didn't think I was going to enjoy being in one place for so long because I don't like Las Vegas. But I've come to realize that you don't have to like a place in order to like what's happening.
Yeah.
And I think we're all going to end up in one place and sitting on a chair doing what we do. Right. And that's what they're doing.
Right.
You're going to sit in a big dome. It doesn't affect the show, which is cool. That's, you know, after a while you see these videos of Elvis Presley, you know, how many shows did he do in Vegas? And boy, it ate him up.
Yeah.
I don't see that happening because we don't do enough of them and we're always trying to do something a little different. So I like residencies, but I don't want to think that this is where everything's leading to.
Yeah.
There's something beautiful about being at a big field with a huge PA system and turning it up really loud and watching people get rained on and stick around and have the time of their life.
Yeah.
And wait for the sunshine. And it's like, whoa, there's that's cool. That's a big show. That was fun, you know? Pain in our ass. But
but
it's rock and roll.
Yeah. Without all those people getting rained on, we wouldn't have a gig.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. Yeah. That's right, man.
Donnie, I appreciate your time, man. I know you're busy. I know we tried this before and we ran into some problems, but
We tried doing it over breakfast and it was too loud.
It was too loud. Yeah. I think we're loud eaters.
Yeah. Clink clanks. Yeah. I see. I chatter my teeth all the time creating beats. So you're picking up on all that. Yeah, man.
Yeah. But, you know, the podcast is called Is Breakfast Included? And since I know what you had for breakfast, what would you have for breakfast if we were having it?
If we were having it today?
Yes.
I would probably have what I had this morning, which was I start out with glass of water first thing in the morning, and then I go on to some turmeric and ginger shot for your immunity, your good health, and then maybe some pineapple, and then I might have some like a fruit parfait, some blueberries and stuff like that. I'd probably do that. Otherwise, I'd go the unhealthy route and have eggs over easy with some rye toast and home fries.
Right on, man.
Be one or the other.
Donnie, I appreciate your time, man. It's a pleasure working with you and
you as well.
And getting to know you these last few months.
You as well. Yeah, man. We're going to continue that.
All right, brother. Have a good day. Good talking to you.
All right, man. You too. Take good care.
There you go. Don McCauley. Great guy, huh? Super interesting guy. You could find out more about him at CustomRusticFurniture.com. See what him and his dad do as far as the rustic furniture. On Instagram, you can find him at TwigDrum. TwigDrum. And man, he's always posting, you know, his little adventures, show pictures, show videos. While you're online, check out isbreakfast.com. You can link to our YouTube, to our Instagram, to our podcast. It streams on all the platforms. Go support, man. Like, subscribe, comment, and give us a review. Tell us how we're doing. All right, guys, I am done. Have a great day. We'll talk to you next week.